Dear Shooter, when time gets slow, you pull out what happens when one gets bored. Today we'll discuss a story written last September by Field and Stream. I think they sum it up quite well. Maybe that's why SHOT Show didn't have many options for new. Keep your engineers busy, my friends. But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip on. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
All right, it's Thursday. And before we get rolling on this, because you found something kind of interesting, but before we get going on that, everybody should have their ballots for the NRA Board of Trustees or Board of Directors.
Yeah, if they get either of the three magazines, it should be in their mailbox if they don't have it already.
So definitely go vote. This is a big one. We've got to turn the NRA around.
We do. There are 28 seats up for grabs, and I know that the reform candidates are running 26, and they have a couple write-ins that are going to fill the gaps. The goal here is to get the old cronies out, the folks that spent a lot of time defending Wayne LaPierre, falling in line, helped caused a lot of the lack of transparency and problems with the NRA that we've seen in the last decade or so. They were right in the middle of it all. So some of these guys, they may be great warriors for the Second Amendment, but they're of the wrong mindset. They need to go. It's
right.
Time.
Right. And if you want to know the candidates that we're looking to get elected, all the reform candidates, Buzz Mills, owner of Gunsight, put up a website. It's called electanewnra.com.
Correct.
It gives, exactly how you should be filling out your ballots to get these reform candidates elected. Now, those that are eligible to vote, you've got to be either a life member or an annual member with at least 5 consecutive years. So make sure that you're caught up on your credentials. April 6th is a deadline for submitting your ballots, and I believe that they have to be to the NRA by then. That's not a mailing date.
Postmarked.
Right. So the two candidates that were... The secretary claims that their nomination was not received in time to be on the ballot. The two write-ins, Charles Brown and Paul Babas. So we got to get these guys elected. And our very own Jason Wilson is on the ballot.
I have decided to lose my damn mind and submit myself to the engine. But if you see a problem, you got to get involved to be part of the solution. And that's where I'm at. I want to be part of the solution.
Well, it's no different than what we just dealt with the national level election. The only way you fix it is from the inside, and you've got to win.
Correct.
So, in light of that, we have created a commercial.
Oh,
that
nice.
We'd like to play. And then we'll move on to some hilarity, right?
Maybe you guys don't know what the topic is yet, but it'll be fun.
Oh, boy. All right. We'll be right back.
As we emerge from turbulent times, the NRA needs integrity as its guiding light. Transparency is the only way forward in the mission to regain trust. Looking to the future, reform candidate Jason Wilson is committed to restoring the NRA to its core principles of honor, responsibility, and unwavering support for your Second Amendment. It will be a long road to bring the NRA back to a transparent, member-oriented organization with integrity at its heart. Together, we can safeguard our rights and strengthen our communities. Vote Jason Wilson to the NRA Board in 2025. NRA 2.0, renewed, resilient, and ready to lead.
Well, I know I already voted for you, and I've submitted my ballot.
I appreciate that. And for those out there that haven't done that yet, one little side note, only 28, including the write-ins, because any more than that invalidates your entire ballot.
Good to
so
know.
So be careful.
Good to know.
28 total. Includes
with
the write-ins.
That's correct.
And where can they find the reform candidates if they don't know who they are?
Electanewnra.com.
Just want to be certain because it isn't easy to find because the NRA does not want the reform candidates.
Yes.
No. And they are very specific. If you go to the website, electanewnra.com, again, this is created by Buzz Mills and his people down there at Gunsight. And they actually have a tab on the website that says, do not vote for. And these are all exactly what you're saying. The old cronies that basically looked the other way or were active in helping Wayne fleece us.
Yeah, they were part of the problem. And if you look at what Buzz did, he's done a really good job of explaining why. Mm-hmm. He didn't just offer you a list of names that need to go. He tells you why that they are not necessarily the right mindset to be part of our leadership anymore.
Right. Now, as a reform candidate, let me just ask you real quick, like, what are you looking to change? Give me like three things that you want to see changed.
In this age of communication, there is no reason on the planet that the issues facing the NRA and membership can't be communicated immediately to membership so the board can actually get solid direction from our membership of how they want us to address it. The board and legal counsel at the NRA needs to be more present in every issue facing our Second Amendment. And from a PR standpoint, we need to let our membership know we're out there doing it. Outside that, I call a spade, and I am not afraid to speak my mind. So I'm going to be maybe an unpopular guy, but they're going to hear me.
Right. So transparency for one.
Correct.
Keeping the members apprised of the issues going on. I'm really hoping to see, you know, again, the transparency, but get the membership numbers back up. Because if we do that, then the NRA, I mean, in political circles on Capitol Hill, is going to become that 800-pound gorilla in the room again. Because right now, the NRA's kind of been absent from the fight the last probably 5 years.
Well, that's the biggest problem with our membership is they've left us in hordes because they don't feel like we've been in the fight for them. Even if we had, we didn't tell them about it.
Well, and you know, my frustration is I see these things going on. I don't see the NRA at the table until it's over, and then they come in, swoop in at the last minute, claim victory.
Yeah, it doesn't
when
work.
You've got, you know, GOA doing the bulk of the work.
A lot of the times, they're in the room, and they're making their membership understand they're in the room.
And that's been kind of frustrating for me. Another thing that I would like to see, and you and I have discussed, is, you know, the NRA from the 501c3 part of it, you know, get back to their core values of education and advocacy.
Correct.
Their education has been severely lacking for almost 20 years.
It just stalled out 20 years ago. It hasn't advanced. And the training and methods have all advanced.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to become more contemporary.
Right. So I'm hoping you're going to push for that.
I am. You know I am.
I know you are. So, yeah, you should all have your ballots. If you don't get one in the mail, where can you get one?
You can seek out the secretary's office at the NRA headquarters, and John Fraser will be happy to figure out how to get you a ballot.
Perfect. Okay, so what is this kooky, crazy thing that you've got?
So, Field & Stream wrote last September, the most bizarre guns ever made.
The puckle gun.
Okay.
All right.
That one's not on the list.
Damn.
All right. So number one is the Krumloff STG-44 assault rifle. Fitted to a Sturmgewehr 44 assault rifle, the Krumloff curved barrel and curved sight allowed soldiers to shoot around corners.
This is World War II Germany,
yeah,
right?
This has got to be a trench warfare World War I.
I'm going to tell you it was made for tank crews.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
And go.
So tank crews, chambered in 45. correct?
44 assault rifle.
Is it 44?
44.
That's an interesting cartridge because that's a little heavier than most in the carbine submachine gun world would be. But you said curved barrel.
Curved scope.
Yeah,
the scope.
Scope.
And wait, both of them are curved.
So we're dealing with a periscope type of environment?
Yes, it is a periscope. Don't you look it up on Google, sir. Well, you're just supposed to talk about it.
I need to find a photo of Krumloff.
I've got one right here.
Can I see it?
No.
I'll be dang. So this looks to be... Gosh dang it.
He's at a loss.
That is a unique little piece of equipment there. The curved barrel's got me thrown. Because it's not all curved. From the chamber, it's straight for about 10 inches, and then it curves.
Yeah, so my thinking is this has got to be a really short bullet going through there.
It's got to be on the subsonic range, otherwise you would have bad pressures. Krumloff. Tank gun. Interesting. All right.
Yes, so it was used, so if their own infantry couldn't keep people off their tank, the tank commander could unbutton his hatch, shoot whoever was trying to blow him up, and button up again. Without ever being exposed to bullets or other inconveniences.
Okay.
looking at the picture, y'all, it shouldn't even work.
No.
But the fact that they did it during wartime, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't.
Well, and I've seen things similar to this. The Germans, the Russians, the Romanians, the Czechs, they've all played with this curved barrel to be able to shoot around corners. And I've never seen anything viable other than... There was one that you put a Glock pistol in and you could flip it around and do things. I can't even remember what it was called now.
Okay, well, so it says the Krumloff never really got all the bugs worked out of it.
Yeah, think?
Bullets shattered inside the barrel, and barrels would only last 300 rounds or so.
Okay, so back to my original statement. It didn't work well.
But it was a good idea at the time. It was 1943, y'all.
Yeah, if you didn't ever take physics, I mean, those things have laws. But, yeah. Okay, interesting gun. Did it ever have a predecessor, something that gave the idea a start?
Not that they said. Again, I feel like it's an engineer. It's the engineer.
Wow, you should feel attacked.
Well, yeah, I'm getting so used to it now that I understand that she does it a half on purpose. But
so is that all you guys got on the curved one?
Yeah, what's next?
Okay, number two, the coffee mill sharps.
I've seen the coffee mill sharps.
Okay, they say there are very few originals, but there are a lot of copycats. Correct. Out of this firearm.
Correct. Now, this is a
Do you know what it
rifle.
Does?
Yep, it has a coffee grinder in the stock. It is actually two things in one. this rifle would allow you to have your morning coffee while you're on post.
Smart.
It's very, and they are very rare. As an original piece, they are very, very rare.
They said only 100 original guns were modified for this. So, right. But there are a ton of copycats out.
Yep. No, and I think Starbucks would be proud, except they're anti-gun bastards. but these are, you can see one of these actually in the Cody Museum. They have a coffee mill, Sharps.
Okay.
Well, also Sharps was out of Cody. So, they're there. It's a very interesting rifle. And that was chambered in, I want to believe it was 45-120.
Says 52 Sharps carbine.
Well, they only did it in 52.
Yes.
That's a big pumpkin ball, man.
Yeah. That's called a lead softball.
Grind their coffee while they're out shooting?
Usually a patrolman, somebody that was out overnight. Yes.
Yeah, that was short-lived.
Well, very limited run.
So you ready for the next one?
All right, what do you got?
All right, what do you got next?
Okay, the third one is actually a civilian firearm. The A-Square 577 T-Rex.
A-Square 577.
It was developed in 1993 at request of two Zimbabwe professional hunters. They wanted a rifle that would stop anything. The T-Rex is all of that. It fires a 750-grain bullet at 2,450 foot per second.
Yeah, wasn't it? It was like a 600 nitro.
And it produces 10,180 foot-pounds of muzzle energy.
I have seen this rifle in the hands of the big guy that's a strong champion of the world, the Beast. He's from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to lean into this thing and shoot it offhand, and it rocked him.
Mm-hmm.
There was also one of these that was shot in Afghanistan in an indoor range. And it was,
I've seen that.
It was in a Mannlicher stock,
mm-hmm.
and it knocked that guy across the room and broke the glass in the door. I mean, this thing's no joke.
They do say the recoil is 172 foot-pounds in a 13-pound rifle.
Foot-pounds. Okay, I know cars that don't have that kind of power.
172 foot-pounds, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so just out of just simple mechanics, a .30-06 has 27 foot-pounds
mm-hmm.
of recoil, of felt recoil. A .556 in a very lightweight M4 has 4 foot-pounds of felt recoil. Let's go to the .375 Chi-Tac, 57 foot-pounds of felt recoil. 172.
Yes, sir. That's
over 3 times a Chi-Tac.
Mm-hmm. You might as well get hit in the shoulder by a garbage truck.
Now, I grew up with a grandfather who liked big shit, and we had a punt gun attached to their boat when we drive down the river and hunt geese. And it was a 3-gauge shotgun.
Oof.
And a 10-horsepower Johnson, it would stall. So I imagine it's in that same range of axle recoil.
Well, they said to put it in perspective, a .458 lot
yep.
generates 73 foot-pounds at the same weight.
More than twice.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
That's retarded.
Yeah, I've seen that gun, and it just, it falls under the just because you can doesn't mean you should.
This is no longer small shoulderable arms. This is
no.
This is artillery.
That's anti-tank.
Absolutely.
I mean, it definitely. Well, yeah, probably anti-tank because I'm not sure it could get high enough to do anti-aircraft.
It's anti-everything. It's bigger than a 20 millimeter.
Yeah.
Nobody has one of those? Huh?
No. Huh? God, I actually enjoy my shoulders.
Wow. No, thank you.
I mean, that's why my competition rifle is 27 pounds and suppressed. There is no recoil. I enjoy shooting it.
Hell of a gun for a 6XC.
Well, and think about this. It was created for a couple of hunters in Zimbabwe. Now, these two put together might weigh 300 pounds soaking wet.
They held it together?
They probably had to.
They had to. Yikes.
All right. So, number 4 is also a civilian gun. It is the Velo Dog Revolver.
Velo with a V?
Yes.
Okay, that's a new one.
The 6mm Velo Dog Double Action Revolver was designed to keep pooches from chasing bicyclists.
Okay, what's a shoot? Birdshot?
5.75mm round.
Okay, it's designed to kill.
It was loaded with either a conventional bullet or cayenne pepper or dust or bullets made from wax, wood, or cork.
Okay. All right.
I will tell you, this is an ugly firearm. It is a hammerless revolver, and it loads like a breech revolver. So the whole mechanism rolls forward instead of coming out to the side.
God, that is just...
It is an ugly gun.
Now I know why it's not around anymore.
And it's double action only.
Of course. Well, when was this produced? It's the early 20th century. So
19th. It says late 19th century France.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're talking 1890s here.
So it looks like a Mad 22 Hornet cartridge.
Oof.
And
rimmed?
Rimmed. It's old. I mean, it's old. It almost is in that made out of France pinfire type of old. It's not quite that old, but it's close.
The it looks like it was produced by the same people that made the Liberator.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. I had an Erector set that old once.
Said dog plinking became so popular that the Velo Dog revolvers were produced in a varying configurations in Belgium, Germany, and Spain, as well as France.
Dog plinking.
And evidently, it's still made by Fukashi. You can go out and buy a new one.
Oh. No, I don't think I will.
I did not
see one of those at SHOT.
I didn't either. I can't say I've ever seen one in person. Interesting. Velo Dog. Weird. That is a weird one. I mean, if anybody out there's got one of these,
I would be curious.
I want to see what it does
just
10 yards on the range.
Right. Because that's kind of the distance you're talking about.
Yeah. Yikes. What else you got?
Okay, so number five is a very interesting thing. It's the 3-gauge kiln gun.
All right.
Sounds like that's what you had on your boat.
Yeah, it was a 3-gauge punt gun. It was a big old shotgun.
I'm sure it doesn't look like this thing.
3-gauge kiln gun.
So
all right, show me.
The kiln gun, steel mills, after the molten metal was poured from their kilns, so they got encrusted with slag. So the mills discovered they could get rid of it by sending men into the kilns with hammers, or they could just blast it with the shotgun.
I see what this is.
All right.
So they're getting rid of slag off of steel pots, because as you forge things, this would be necessary to blast
it off. Okay, that thing looks like something out of Doom.
Yeah.
It's
reminiscent of a 1919, except it's a single shot.
Yeah.
And interesting.
I would be, I can see some, sci-fi movie producer using that base.
And they also have an 8-gauge version of it, but the 3-gauge was the originator. Kiln gun.
So what we're talking about is when Mythbusters, blew up a cement truck.
Yeah. Now, that would actually work to take off the schmegma on the inside of a tank.
It does until you let the whole thing solidify. Then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
All right,
what do you got?
The last one I have. I'm not sure I'm going to say it right. It's a gyro-get handgun with with 10 of the small rockets that the gun is designed to fire is in the photo.
Small rockets.
Yes.
Okay, when was this thing produced?
1965. They fired 12-millimeter or 13-millimeter rockets called microjets.
Okay.
And I'm actually kind of curious to see why this concept didn't take off more. I know ammunition would be a problem, but it is a small arms rocket launcher. There was a carbine model and a pistol of the gyro-get.
Well, they said it folded because the disadvantages were unreliable ignition, so the ports clogged.
Yep.
Very slow to reload, and extreme lack of accuracy. So that, I guess that was back in the day where there wasn't deer grid square.
So basically, you're just launching bottle rockets out of a pistol is what you're...
Poorly made flechettes with their own power system is what the deal is.
Where did this come out of?
Good question.
I mean, this sounds like a German thing to me.
Yeah, it is German.
Rock Island Auction Company.
Yeah, so Robert Manhart is the guy that designed this.
Yeah, it's a German.
And it was, that 1960, 1965 range. Vietnam War was kicking off. There's a whole bunch of variants of it because the Chinese and the Vietnam folks picked up some and wanted to try to backward engineer some of the stuff that they picked up. But we're talking really, really slow, 1,200 feet a second on these little rockets. They weren't very well made, so they didn't fly very far. They had a 55-yard effective range.
Oh, okay.
But what's interesting is a self-propelled projectile had an ability to take a payload. So once it got there, it could cause a small little bit of menace, but they were so tiny, they were ineffective. It was like throwing a firecracker 55 yards. So where did you come up with this thing?
Well, Field and Stream wrote this article. It was released September 3rd of 2024.
Interesting. So I've been around long enough to understand that there's really nothing new in the firearms industry. And we've talked about this a couple episodes ago. But some of this technology could get revisited and it could become new again.
That's our engineer who's very
bored. No, what you do is you hand this stuff to Elon Musk. I mean, this is the guy that's figured out how to reuse rockets.
Well, I mean, lands them, for Christ's sake.
Right.
So that's a whole different physics level feat in itself.
Right. I mean, send it to the rocket man and not Kim Jong-un.
If you miss with one of these things, maybe you could get one to come home so you could try it again.
No, I don't want it coming back.
No boomerangs for you?
No.
Coward.
So, when people get bored and start designing new things, these are the things that could happen.
Well, we find these things when you're looking to solve a problem, often when that's when nobody has. And we see this all the time. We see Glock conversion kits that turn it into a carbine.
Mm-hmm.
And it folds out of the way so you can conceal carry it.
You're still carrying a cinder block.
Nobody had that question. You know, wonder if I can make a carbine that fits in my pocket.
Right.
No. Stop it. The folks that are really good at it, though, from an engineer standpoint, of taking this level of approach to it, are Kel-Tec. Those boys have taken firearms design to a whole different level. Now, they don't always work, and they're kind of funny looking, but they are economically built because they use a lot of injection molding.
Mm-hmm.
But their designs, they have ejections that come out of a barrel underneath the barrel. They have folding guns. They're doing things in a single-stack pistol with a 22 mag that people don't normally do. They are these contemporaries in that engineering world.
Yep.
I suggest that everyone looks this article up and actually look at the pictures, especially of the curved barrel with the curved scope.
The curved scope's got me intrigued. I've seen World War I BARs modified with a fire control system and the whole thing with a periscope for World War I in the trenches. They would mount them up on the edge of the trench, and then the guy stood below grade and could use them effectively because he could see. But, I mean, the BAR is a whole different game, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting ingenuity going on, what, most of that was 50 years ago?
A lot of it, except for the T-Rex
right.
gun. That wasn't super long ago.
Interesting.
Who designed that thing, Linebaugh?
I don't think Linebaugh was that brave. That thing's crazy.
Well, let's pay some bills, and we will be right back.
If you haven't tried 10th Mountain Whiskey, can you even call yourself a shooter? Okay, Mr. AK guy that only drinks vodka. 10th Mountain has that, too. Still too much? Maybe that cordial would suit your unrefined palate. But for you real pipe hitters out there, the single malt can't be beat. Whiskey is an acquired taste. And if you don't like whiskey, I suggest you acquire some taste. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. It's whiskey worth fighting for.
When it comes to your personal security, you want the best. And your training shouldn't be an exception. WyoTac is your one stop for all of your education and training needs. Covering competitive, defensive, and hunting classes, as well as medical, fieldcraft, and survival courses. With over a decade of experience and with a network of resources, WyoTac can help to meet your goals. When no one is coming, you have to rely on yourself. Make sure you know what to do when the time comes. WyoTac. Empowerment through self-reliance.
All right, so one of the things that I've kind of heard over the last week after SHOT was everybody was like, well, what was the theme of SHOT? And I've heard a couple people say it now, and I kind of agree. This year, it was like the year of the suppressor. I didn't hardly see a gun that didn't have a suppressor on it. And this makes me encouraged, and this also ties into why we need to get the NRA back on board with our agenda, because I think suppressors, and Michael Bain, I was listening to him last week, and he was kind of talking about this, have reached the tipping point the way AR-15s did a decade ago, where they're just ubiquitous now. And I think suppressors have hit that same point to the numbers where you could probably make a case that suppressors are now common use.
I think you could make that case. They've really come into their own in the past 5 years, even. We still have a couple roadblocks from a manufacturing side of things, and it's nothing more than regulatory. There is a wide range of technology out there that's almost freeware,
mm-hmm.
that it works just fine. Now, there are some companies really kind of doing some cutting-edge flow check type of suppressing, and they're really, really quiet. They actually help recoil. They enhance accuracy. There's a lot of benefits to the modern science behind it. But you're right. There was a lot of suppressors that shot.
Well, every company I went by is now making one.
Yep.
I mean, Savage is making a suppressor now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're everywhere.
I sat and talked and had a conversation with Bilson Arms. I've got them building me one.
And I've seen that one shot. I've not shot one of theirs. I know Billy, and it'll be amazing. He is a well-field engineer, and he understands flow.
And he understands pressure, too. And in talking to him, and I talked to Jeremy, and they're actually going to build me a little bit more custom because they were using aluminum for their internals and then stainless steel for the exterior to keep it light. I'm going to have him make me one that's completely stainless.
Okay.
I wanted to be able to handle higher pressures because I want to run this on my 300.
All right.
So I talked to him the other day. He's building me one that's going to be an 8-inch can.
Okay.
Entirely stainless steel. It's going to be a little heavier. But again, this is going on a 27-pound gun. I'm not concerned about weight at this point.
Well, and the proliferation of suppressors, you started to see happen in the past 3 years when you started to see quick detach and muzzle brake quick threads. And there are some still holdouts that do direct thread. I'm one of them just because I haven't converted all my rifles. But the easy access mechanism, there's a company that produces a hot mitt with them now so you can handle them when they're warm.
Right.
The technology that comes out to support the suppressor is kind of an indicator that it's becoming a real common use item. Back to your point.
Mm-hmm.
We've said it 100 times. If it was invented today, it'd be regular mandatory equipment.
Right.
Because of the hearing issue.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, while we were at SHOT, the legislation of the Hearing Safe Protection Act was reintroduced.
Right.
We have never had a better circumstance in Congress to try and push that through. The ATF has always said, never happened, it's too political. I think they're wrong in this one. I think it's going to happen.
I think it's got its best chance that it ever had. And like I said, I think we have an argument now for common use. I mean, I look back, I think I bought my first suppressor in 2006, 2007, and it was an 8-month ordeal to get it. In subsequent ones that I bought, I mean, I had one that was coming, I was like 18 days shy of 2 years for the approval process from the ATF, which is ridiculous. Now we're getting approvals in days.
Well, the NFA and the ATF and their processing of suppressors, they kind of got in trouble for dragging their feet.
Right.
Because it was blatant.
It was.
And so when they got in trouble and their hands slapped on that, you started seeing times as short as 3 days.
Right, which is what it should have been. I mean, I saw one that was, I don't think it was 36 hours.
Oh, wow.
I was in Reno last year teaching a class, and I remember when I showed up, it was on a Monday afternoon. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and there was a guy there filling out his paperwork for a suppressor. On Wednesday, when I showed up to teach class, I was talking to the owner, and he goes, yeah, that guy that you saw, he's already approved. He's coming to pick it up today.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, like 36 hours. Now, I think the average is about 2 weeks, but that still beats the months and years we were waiting before.
And I will say that I have to hand it to Congress in a way. The tax stamp for a Class 3 item, when they labeled suppressors as that through the NFA, was supposed to be a cost-prohibitive fee. Mm-hmm. That $200 back in 1934 was a pretty big deal.
It was.
Today, $200 is not that big a deal.
No.
The power of the dollar is just not the same with the common man. But the approval times, the low cost of the tax stamp, and now we're looking at a tax stamp process actually going away, it has no business being on a muffler.
Right. Now, my guess is it's gonna get relisted. It'll still be NFA, but it's going to be an any other weapon, which is a $5 stamp, and basically approval's guaranteed.
For them to really take off and be commonplace, they need to be delisted altogether.
I totally agree. The I mean, lion, to me, it's a safety device.
Yeah, the lion's share of people out there that don't have suppressors, that want them, they don't have them because they don't want to go through the bureaucracy of the government to
right.
get a piece of equipment.
Right.
And I don't blame them.
I don't either.
And like I was saying, it has no business on a muffler.
No. And I've been an advocate for this for years, that I think they are a safety device. there's not really much that any of the three of us shoot anymore that's not suppressed.
I choose not to. I shoot everything suppressed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a few that aren't. My 350 Legend. I don't shoot that suppressed simply because I don't have a big enough can for it. They're out there. I mean, when Brandy and I were walking around SHOT, we saw this, like, this was like a stationary, had the gunshot detection microphones on it. I mean, this thing was a 20-millimeter cannon. It had a suppressor on it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right.
Everything can be suppressed. Now, I have noticed when you start getting into those bigger guns, the 375s, the 408 Chi-Tac, the 50 cals. Now, a suppressor actually increases the recoil on those.
So the overboard nature of those firearms, you can't get around the physics of it. Suppressors will always create a level of back pressure to the firearm. It's just nature of holding that gas back, not letting it exit the muzzle like you're talking about doing.
Mm-hmm.
In the smaller calibers, it's happening so fast, and the gas is not as a big a volume as what we're talking about. I was on Fort Bliss one time, and they had a Abrams tank in a training area, and it was suppressed. the can on that thing was incredible because it had two huge side barrels.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Size of a Volkswagen bus apiece.
Mm-hmm.
But it handled the noise and the blast off that tank round pretty darn well.
Right.
I mean, you did not need ears when they torched it off.
Right. Which, I'm not quite sure why you would suppress a tank.
Because the civilians around the base didn't want to hear it go off all the time.
Okay, that's fair.
That's it.
I can see that. But practical application, I don't see it.
I don't know. You roll into World War II, and if you could be the quiet tank, you'd be deadly.
True.
So I don't know. I think everything, if it can be suppressed, should be.
I totally agree. I mean, I went on a hunt this year, and the guy I was with, he was not suppressed, and we got into a herd of elk, and he understood. He's like, you're suppressed, you shoot first because you're not going to spook the herd.
Nope.
And that's exactly how it worked. I mean, I shot, dropped one, and they all stood there like, what just happened? Margaret fell down.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually part of the panel that helped the Wyoming legislature figure out what suppressors really were. And when they went to legalize them for hunting use in Wyoming, the opposition was going to tell you that, you know, it's not fair equipment. The animal uses the sound to know which way to run away from and the whole bull. Well, the projectile's moving three times the speed of sound.
Right. They don't hear it.
The job's done by the time the sound reaches them.
Right.
So that became a fallacy. It became hunting in somewhat of a mountainous area where you got residentials around. They don't want to hear that going off on Sunday morning.
Right.
So it's not just for your hearing. It's pleasant for everybody around you. You go to South Africa. You go to Europe. It's considered rude to not have your firearm suppressed.
Right.
And anything, whether you're at the range or in the hunting field,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, bad form, if you will.
Right. Now, I will say, though, they're not, like, having a suppressor is not always the best thing. And I say this because of some experiences I had in Afghanistan. What we found in the high mountains when we first went in, most of us were running suppressed. Now, in the mountains like that, and you take a shot, and let's be real, like suppressors, they don't eliminate the noise. It's not Hollywood quiet. That's just not how it is. But when we were up in the mountains, what we found was that if we were suppressed, we could get pinpointed because there wasn't enough sound to bounce. Now, so we started taking our suppressors off. And when that sound was bouncing around the mountains, we were a lot harder to figure out where we were.
I can see that from just how a sound wave runs. But outside that really weird circumstance.
Right. Yeah. Suppress it.
Yeah. Suppress it.
Suppress it. I think it's safer for everybody. Definitely hearing. And from an education standpoint, I love when all of my students show up suppressed because now we don't have to mess with ear pro. Everybody can hear the instructions clearly. Nobody's taking out foamies or having to take off their ear pro to hear what's going on. And somebody's taking a shot. Now you inadvertently, you have your ear pro off. Somebody takes a shot. Had that happen. I don't know how many times. It's a lot more pleasant for the instructor because typically I'm standing to the side right with my face right in front of your gun. It's one of the reasons that I don't allow breaks on carbines, especially if I'm running in an indoor range.
Oh, God,
because
no.
That just pounds you to death all by day. The end of the day.
And a related circumstance, you go to a match and you travel with the same squad from stage to stage, and there's always that one guy.
Oh, God.
Right?
He's shooting with a break, and he's shooting MOA.
Speaking the wrong language.
The MOA.
But I watched last year a gear queer trend, and yeah, you guys know who you are, that are actually claiming that the suppressor harms your accuracy.
Yeah, you guys were telling me about this. This was the ILR match, Night Force, and everybody had these like ridiculously long breaks.
Yeah, I saw one break that was 14 inches. It was the monolithic core of a suppressor without the can. And it's retarded. There's no real data to show that that actually is real.
You know, and from what we've found, I mean, we've been running suppressed for over a decade now. I mean, pretty consistent. Yes, there is a point of impact shift from suppressed to non-suppressed. If you develop your dope and everything suppressed and you're running the same suppressor on the gun every time, there is no significant loss of accuracy. It just isn't.
Many of those guys don't know that a suppressor does need cleaned on occasion. When it weighs 7 pounds heavier than it was once, what do you think happened?
Oh, and I will attest to that. I dropped my Thunder Beast into a Sonic cleaner because it was getting heavy. And I lost 9 ounces just in the cleaning process. And it wasn't completely clean. And I ended up blowing the core out of that one eventually.
It's clean now.
It was really clean. But, you know, Thunder Breeze took care of me. The customer service was impeccable. They updated my suppressor to a new core, welded it back up, sent it back to me. I had it back in 2 days. And, yeah, you're right. They will lead up. They will carbon up.
Now, to be fair to Thunder Beast, yes, it was to you in 2 days, but they are in the same state as you. So if you're in Florida, it may not be two.
I had got to tell you, they put it back in a FedEx box. It was back in my hands really quick. So it may not be 2 days to guys in Florida, so it's three. But the service on quality suppressor companies is astounding.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I have had people tell me that you don't have to clean a suppressor because the gases blowing through there are so fast they blow everything out. That's not the case.
I found that to not be the case because what I shoot that suppressor on most of the time are high pressure rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out with 6.5/284 Norma, which is a high pressure round, low volume. Move up to the 28 Nosler. That's a high pressure, high volume round. Your 300 PRC. That's going to be that high-pressure, high-volume round. And your suppressor, just like a brake, just like a crown on a rifle, it's going to carbon up.
Mm-hmm.
And over repeated use, it will let up.
Well, so I tell you, that's what I would like to see going forward from the suppressor manufacturers is a way to, you know, unscrew the bottom so that you can get the baffles out so that you can clean the damn thing.
There are companies that specialize in serviceable. Silencer Co. is one of them.
Right.
They do a great job. Of maintaining, one, the sound decibel rating that they claim. A lot of times they're under that. And having something you can clean. It's fantastic.
Right. I think going forward, that's what I would like to see. So take note, suppressor manufacturers.
Yes.
Give us something that we can service.
Correct.
Because that's always been my biggest gripe with suppressors is trying to keep them clean.
And coming back 360 to the SHOT Show on suppressors, I sat next to a guy at lunch, and then I followed him back up to his supplier showcase booth. He was 3D printing in metal the cores for suppressors.
Okay.
Now, he was able to do things that you can't machine.
Right.
In the way that that thing was designed, but the way that it does the pressures and the form flow was quite astounding. He was able to get decibel ranges down in the 70s with a 3D printed one. Now, they don't last as long.
No, because what's he making them out of? Aluminum?
He was printing titanium.
Okay.
It just, they don't come out smooth. They're not, they're going to catch all the little debris and stuff. So that cleaning mechanism like we're talking about is one of the banes of the existence of it. But that technology is advancing all kinds of firearms, pieces and parts, because it can be on demand now.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, give it another 5 years, that technology is going to be top notch. Anything that you can machine, you'll be able to 3D print.
Well, a lot of things you can't machine, you can 3D print. There's designs out there that there's no way to machine that, even with a five-axis mill. You can't get it done.
Right.
You can't reach around corners with a mill bit. In the 3D printing world, the ability to do metals is changing the game.
Right. I'm excited for what's coming. It's going to be a couple of years, but I think we're finally now in an environment that's going to allow that innovation. We've been in an environment the last 4 years where everybody's just trying to get through it. They're not innovating because, well, that might, you know, invite regulation.
Well, I will tell you, it's economics 101. We've had been in a dismal economic situation for several years now. COVID kicked off a lot of supply chain stuff. Politics kicked off a lot of political fears. People weren't spending the money. And if people aren't spending the money, brands are not spending the money on R&D to innovate. They're going to keep the status quo. Why would they? Exactly right. They're having a hard time getting consumers to buy what they already make.
Right.
Going out and making something new is not in the wheelhouse.
No.
That's why I think a lot of things at SHOT Show weren't new. There was a lot of colors. There was a lot of new chamberings of the same pistol, of the same rifle. But for the most part, I'm seeing the advances like the safety equipment and the medical training aids. And yes, everybody has a suppressor. Everybody has a lever gun and a double stack 1911 style pistol now. Those are the easy low hanging fruits.
Mm-hmm.
Next year's going to be interesting.
They're going to shoot around corners?
Well, we did that. It didn't work. So I don't know if we'll go back there.
Someone's going to do it.
Oh, yeah. Someone will. And looking at you, Kel-Tec.
Yeah.
If anybody can make it work, it's them.
Right. There was years ago, there was what they call a side shot. And it was a...
Yes, that's the one I was thinking of. Throw a Glock in it.
Yep. And you throw it out there, and you can push a button, and the whole mechanism turns 90 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and you can shoot around a corner with it.
Worked with a little video camera.
Yep.
I don't know. It still seems impractical.
And if you can think it, somebody's trying it right now.
Well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go try out my new gun.
That's right. You won one and it came in.
I did. It came in today and it fortunately didn't get stolen from me because she tried.
That grip's a little too big for me, so yeah. Well, I tried.
It's a Glock 19 clone with a little bit better grip angle.
It is. It's the Ruger RMX. This is something else. I think this is going to be kind of the future of firearms, especially handguns. This was a collaboration with Magpul. Magpul is making the frame, and Ruger is making all the drop-in components. I mean, even the firing mechanism is a drop-in. This means you can change the slide, you can change the barrel, you can change a lot of the components in it. And I said they're claiming 85% compatibility with Glock parts.
Interesting. Why not just full compatibility?
I think there's still some proprietary stuff that they just cannot clone.
Okay, fair enough.
But I see this happening. I mean, we saw this with the SIG 365, a lot of the drop-in components. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be wave of the future because now a person can go, they buy the frame, right? And then they just buy whatever components, whatever drop-in components they want to configure the gun the way they want it.
So it's interesting. The industry has taken keys from the AR world,
mm-hmm.
and being Barbies for men.
Right.
And they patterned it off the most popular pistol on the planet, the Honda Civic of the gun world,
right.
The Glock.
Right.
All of the updates and changes to the Glock have been very minor, very nominal. They haven't changed it much.
No.
Don't change it if it's not broke.
That's exactly right. It works. Gustav got it right the first time out of the gate.
He did.
So.
And that was, what, 1984?
Something like that, yeah. Everybody out there has a Glock clone to some level.
Right.
I went to a booth that's completely Turkish, Radical Arms.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an entire line of really economical Glock 19 clones. And everything from a race gun all the way down to a compact type model. And Turkish made, Turkish run, $350 for a made pistol.
Right. And honestly, most of the clones that I've shot, they fit me better than a real Glock.
There's some ergonomics and things that they're doing that they're taking cues from the race gun world, and I think they're getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that they're stealing from other places to adapt some of the most popular items. The AR world's been doing that for years.
Well, you know, again, if it's not broke,
that's right.
Don't fix it. So I guess we run a little bit long here, but hopefully we brought you some good information. Go vote. We need to get the NRA back in the game.
We do.
Trump has made a lot of promises, and we need to hold his feet to the fire, and especially Congress.
He's doing what he said he was going to do.
He is, and I'm liking what I'm seeing so far, but, you know, we're only, what, 15 days in? So go vote. Let's get the NRA back on track. Let's get them fighting for us. And until next week, blame your suppressor?
Yes.